And therefore you pick up on what to do to that area all that more quickly. Which you can't really get off of an impersonal needle that you happen to have inserted. That's my private opinion.
Is there any advantage in just looking for tension states using a kind of a mudra system and not necessarily using the mudra mat?
Yeah, I do it frequently, but that's the next stage up. We have one person here who can literally go over a person with his hands and pick them up exquisitely and just untangle them just doing this sort of business. But
or you can just sit in meditation and direct the flow of the meditation to that area and the tension can release.
Yes. I can arc mine out. I can have a stiff knee, for example, shall we say, because something of mine's got stuck. Shall we say the large intestines got, or the liver has got stuck here. And I can sit here and doing it completely via the meditative system, the backward flowing breath, taking the breath up and as the on the in-breath and as I breathe out, send the energy from that into the area and just release the area. What they call arcing, but it's not advisable until you've learned how to do the other one, because you can send your foot flying in the air, for example, by that, and if you've got a boot on the end, it might hit somebody and they're not going to be too pleased. You can do things of that sort once you got good at it.
Oh, that's right. I should mention that. Reminds me. If you happen to find the mudra type of system something compatible to you and happen to start using it a fair amount, you may sometimes find
which
that there'll be spontaneous muscle spasms or little twitchings or things of that sort. That's perfectly normal. Don't get worried by it.
Oh, there's one of those questions on the MMPI which says I only twitch now and then.
Yeah. There are extreme individual differences in that. There are some people that the tension will, if it starts to release, will simply flow away, and there's absolutely no sign of anything of this sort at all. Just nothing. There are other people, when a particular spot of tension starts to break up and release, that will flop around like a mackerel out of water, and everything in between. And it doesn't matter whether there's no movement like that or whether there's a great deal of movement, to whether the tension releases. It just seems to be individual differences in how it goes. But if you do end up starting to twitch visibly, don't worry about it. It's just the tension starting to break up. And
it can also happen whether during the mudra or during daily activity.
It also happens to some people if they're particularly oriented towards that way of releasing tension, that they can just be sitting in meditation without ever having done any mudra
and
on
suddenly
at all.
This most violent thing.
Sort of
like
and that's part of it. It's no,
and
it no problem.
Shake the tongue, and there's no problem. It's just you've let out a bit of tension. Very useful pieces of information to deal with.
I'm just wondering how you reconcile the, you know, what seems to be a basic idea to all religions, that is that trying to save the other person before yourself, with the idea...
You save the other person by saving yourself.
Yeah. But it seems that the meditation is an effort to work on your own.
What you need to do,
right,
what you need to do,
yeah,
is think up who is the other person I intend to save before I save me. It's not the man sitting next door to you, it's something that's unborn.
The idea of saving someone else before yourself is fairly alien to Buddhism.
You see, I do not want an unborn child to take what I've got. But there's nothing I can do about my next door neighbor. However, if by the fact that I am trying to do something about me, he sees me and says, wow, that's what I want to do, then by accident I've also saved him. But the person I really want to do something about is whoever's going to collect up what I've got. And whoever is going to collect up what I am going to bequeath to them as a result of what I've done. I do not want an unborn being to collect that up. I have not the right, in my own mind, to impose that on something else, especially something I don't know. That seems to be awfully unfair. Yes.
In connection with the Dr. Mooney, I was wondering how you personally feel about the psychics, legitimate psychics, and the use of psychics. I noticed the Los Angeles Police Department is now employing psychics to help them track down lost.
Well, if I were the Los Angeles Police, it would be the truth. If I were the Los Angeles Police, it would be the truth, the whole truth, and anything else that works. Considering the amount of problems they've got in Los Angeles.
How do you feel about the use of psychics in, if they can't do it through meditation, you know, getting into retracing their past lives?
What would you say to that one?
Well, I would certainly say that I do not have any reason to doubt that there are some people who do have abilities in that line. And I don't know what the basis of those abilities is. And I'm sure there are some who fake it and some who legitimately do something that other people don't seem to be able to do too well. And that it can be of use in some circumstances, okay? I do feel that if one, in terms of now tracing one's own, let's say, past karma, I would rather stick with meditation and allow it to develop naturally for myself than to invite someone else in who has some sort of psychic ability to help me with it, simply because, this is speaking personally.
Me too.
I have the faith that such things, if one is honest in training oneself to be the best human being one can be, and that such things will unfold naturally in their own time and in their own way and in a way that is useful. But I'm not certain that if I ask someone else in to sort of give me information on this, that it might not be too soon or in a way that's not assimilable by me at the present time and therefore possibly cause some damage. It's almost like the old business of in psychiatry and psychology of how deep do you make your interpretations. The well-trained analyst does not make his interpretations as deeply as he can understand what's going on with the patient. He tries to keep his interpretations just below where, just sort of the things that are not quite but almost accessible to the patient's awareness at the present time. Things that can be assimilated and used. He could have an incredible insight as to what's going on very deeply. And if he says it, nothing. Okay? But if he can get to something that's just below the surface and it's just vaguely assimilated, then the therapy progresses. Well, in the process of doing this through meditation and through one's own training of awareness, training oneself, that seems to be what happened. But I have a feeling and somewhat of a fear that if another party comes in and does that through some psychic power, they may be, as it were, the analyst who's making an interpretation that's too deep, and damage can get them.
I would
that's
like to add something to that if I can. And that is, in a way, it's the same as the person, only on a much, on a somewhat deeper level, it's the same as the person who takes drugs to get a religious experience and then finds it all the more difficult to get a religious experience simply because he has made an attempt to rob his own spirit. And in robbing his own spirit, that has made it... put this. He's stolen from himself by trying to do it by a wrong means. And the next step on that, if you do it by a wrong means, is to rob yourself on an even deeper level.
It's not wrong in the sense of right or wrong. It's just wrong in the sense of it doesn't work. In the sense of getting something that is really completely yours and that you can assimilate completely with you. There's nothing wrong in that sense with these things, but they don't work so good.
Anytime I've talked to someone here who has tried drugs, and one or two of them have tried them, and that is the reason they are here. Wow, if I can get this on drugs, just think what I could get by doing the thing properly. They've dropped drugs like that and they've come here. And they've done really well, but each one of them has told me the same thing. Having done that bit in the beginning made it all that much harder, because they'd sort of robbed themselves of their own virginity, spiritual virginity. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, and the way it comes out is not a, it doesn't come out to the person as, you know, oh, I'm unworthy, I've robbed myself.
No.
It comes out as, well, I have this inkling of where I'm going, and every time something at all happens in my meditation, I immediately, involuntarily compare it with this state that I once knew on drugs. Of course, as soon as you can start comparing things, you start chopping the unity up into duality, and it just all goes flat. And this happens time and time again until finally the person says, oh, I'm going to forget about what I understood on drugs. I'm just going to go about my daily life, my daily training, my meditation. And then when they finally do that and stop comparing the thing, then things can start happening.
Yes. And that's what I'm afraid of for the psychic getting in it.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't do it myself, I need a third party. And then you run bump into the thing of, I can't do anything myself, I've got to have a priest, or I've got to have this, or I've got to have that. You can do this for yourself. Yes, I'm teaching you how to do it. But you don't have to have me around. The first time I ever published my book, I called it Selling Water by the River. It was true. I was selling water by the river, but nobody realized it. You've all got this ability. Well, if you're willing to pay me $7 for the book on how to do it, I'm not going to complain. You see what I'm saying? I'm quite honest about this.
Yeah, but I think there's some paradox in it. You don't need the teacher, I suppose you need a teacher.
It's awfully useful to have somebody ring up or come and see. But it's also absolutely imperative to know that within you is the whole ability. I am not giving you something that makes you able to do this. I'm showing you where to look for it. It's a very different matter.
Why did you teach us the title?
Because I didn't like it. It was too cutesy pie.
to say...
I'm having difficulty digesting your answer to the previous question. So if I can understand this correctly.
Sure.
Considering an acute situation, not something that is an ongoing thing.
Yep.
According to the Buddhist concept that sacrificing, such as the situation of a husband for his wife, or a parent for his child, and the attempt to save them is contrary to your concepts of...
Oh, no. No, 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 no. No, no. It's not contrary at all. What you have to know is that although you do as much as you can, you personally can't do it. The person themselves has to do it. You can show them, or you can, I can... point out a million things, but I can't make the person do it for himself, and I shouldn't try to force him, because it's got to come spontaneously from him, which is the same reason as why you don't go out and proselytize. A person has got to want God. You can't force God down his throat.
It's the same what you were saying about the paradox of you don't need a teacher. Yet teachers are necessary. Well, they aren't necessary, but they're damned useful. But not necessary. But that doesn't deny their usefulness.
You're right.
Okay.
Yes. And it is also terribly important not to think that the master is giving you something that you don't already possess.
Because that's where it goes off the rails.
You yourself are perfect as you are. You are as a perfect piece of timber that I, as a carpenter, can teach you how to carve. But the piece of timber is perfect. And it has all the shapes of the Buddha already within it. All you have to do is look. That's all I am doing. don't think that anything, that I have anything that you have not got. The one thing that you have to learn with a vengeance, as the Zen master, is that A, you are not God, B, that there is nothing in you that is not of God, and that that is true of every other living thing around you.
It's the failure to understand that that breeds Jim Jones types.
And it is also the reason why it is so important that you do not have these messiahs, in quotes, appearing and disappearing. I was saying the other day that to a certain extent I blame Christianity for this, because it has this idea of a second coming of a messiah. Buddhism has had one similar problem in one of its sects, the Nichiren sect, simply because the starter of that, Nichiren, said that that he would come back again and raise up a wonderful Buddha land. And they've had hell to pay in the East because this person said that. Mm-hmm. Anytime you have a second coming, you run the risk of Jim Joneses. Now, I've got nothing against Christianity, but I do wish they hadn't done that piece of it.
Yeah, in fact, Buddhism has the same thing, Maitreya, the Buddha which is to come.
But that's very, very seldom heard about,
yeah.
Unfortunately. The Buddha sat on that one.
Every once in a while you get someone calling himself Maitreya. And claiming to be, you know,
there's one in England right now, but fortunately he's just small
problem.
Fry. go ahead. The Nichiren one's the one that's the headache, because Nichiren Shoshu is all over this country at the moment.
Modern psychology seems to indicate that we've got this archetype that, you know, keeps putting this Messiah image out here. We've got this some deep, you know, feeling or belief racially that there is going to be this rebirth in the form of a person, but. I mean, isn't there an equivalent to that in Buddhism in a way with enlightenment? Isn't that, you know,
it's possible for everyone to do.
It's everybody.
Yeah, but it's everybody.
Every single
everybody.
One of you is Maitreya.
All that special, therefore.
Mm-hmm. And being Maitreya means to be sane.
Yeah.
Rather than insane. Everybody is slightly insane because we have this cut off line of greed, hate and delusion. If you have a healthy swatch of greed, hate and delusion, you're sane. Alright. Buddhism says when you've got very, very little greed, hate and delusion, you are approaching sanity. And when you've really transcended it all, then you are sane. So it puts the cut off line of sanity somewhat higher. And Buddhahood is the sanity line. And it is the rightful place of every single person in this room. And every one of you is capable of getting there. And any time there's a war, you push the sanity line down. And wars cease when somebody says, hey, enough, I'm not letting the sanity line go any lower. And the possibility of war decreases as you push the sanity line higher.